Hi, everybody. I'm Brian Schrader, and I want to welcome you to Faded Signals. This is the podcast from FadedSignals.com. That's my website where we talk about the history of broadcasting through pictures and videos. Well, this podcast is going to do the same thing, only we're going to use audio interviews. I'll be talking with the people who study and write about the history of broadcasting and the people who made that history. We're going to get firsthand accounts from the people who were there. And for this first podcast, I can't think of a better start. I grew up in the Raleigh, North Carolina area in the 1980s, and in our house, and most of the other houses I knew, we only watched WRAL-TV and Action News 5. Charlie Gatti and Adele Arakawa had the news, Tom Suter had the sports, and Bob DeBartolaben had the weather. Well, my family will tell you that when I was 3 years old, I was walking around pointing at maps saying that I was Bob DeBartolaben, or at least something close to DeBartolaben. It was not a phase. It stuck, and now it's a career. I'm not doing the weather, but I am on the air doing news and traffic over WRAL-TV. I'm living the dream. So Bob met me at the TV station recently, and we talked about his decades in radio and on television, and I asked him if I should thank him or blame him for inspiring me to get into the business.
Probably blame me.
Tell me about growing up.
Well, let's see. I was born in Buffalo, New York. I had parents that lived in East Aurora, which is just 18 miles outside of Buffalo. And my dad married a very attractive young lady. And she died unexpectedly and at a very young age. And I had a grandmother and an uncle in Philadelphia. And so my dad was traveling all over the United States for a company called Flincoat. They manufactured asphalt compounds. So he couldn't raise me. So it was his mother and his brother. And I was with them for many, many, many years in Philly. Until my dad got into a construction business in Greensboro and set for me. And I moved there when I was 11. And if somebody normally says, you know, where's home? I like to say Greensboro because, God, it was a wonderful, wonderful town. I didn't think I'd ever leave it, but finally did. So, and graduated from a school up in New Jersey, prep school, and which I still go see. Mm-hmm. And I love the place.
What's the name of the place?
Pennington. Pennington School. And I really do enjoy it. And I try to get up there every year. And this May, they're celebrating their 175th anniversary. And co-ed, they about 500 students, half boarding, half day students. Mm-hmm. And I just love the place. I really do. And I support them. Served a year in the Merchant Marines and 2 years in the Navy. And in the Merchant Marines, I was in the cadet school, the officer's school, and they kept saying, you're not going to make a very good officer. And it was a voluntary program, and so I said, well, I won't tell you what I told them. And the draft board started worrying me, and so the Navy had a two-year program, so I enlisted in the Navy, and I enjoyed it. And after 22 months, they ran out of money with the program, and so those of us who were in the two-year program, got out 2 months early.
Bob never considered going into broadcasting until he was a student at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
This is strange, really strange. When I was at Carolina and I was in a fraternity, and one of my brothers came up and said, you don't have a Yankee accent and you don't have a Southern accent. You're just kind of in between. And I'm recording some commercials for homework. Would you read some parts for me? And I said, oh, and he said, I'll buy you a beer. And I said, well, yeah, sure. So, and that's how that came about. And I read the parts. Well, the next thing I know, a man by the name of Earl Wynn, who was the head of the, I think it's broadcast communication. Anyhow, he called me on the phone, and he said, I'd like to see you. Will you come by, and let's talk? Well, I was majoring in general college, because I didn't know what I wanted to do. I had no earthly idea. Yeah. And so I went to see him, and he said, I'd like to see you switch your major to communications, broadcasting. I said, why not? Well, I told my dad, you ever tell your dad something that he went through the roof? You know, hey, Dad, come back. You know? And he was furious. And he said, you'll never make it. You won't make it. I got in a car and I drove to Durham the very next day. And I'm driving down the street and there is a sign that there's a radio station there. It was called WTIK. And it was owned by Floyd Fletcher, one of the three sons that A.J. Fletcher had, Floyd, Fred, and Frank. And they were all in the business. Frank was a communications attorney in Washington, appearing before the Federal Communications Commission. Floyd was owner of WTIK and eventually Channel 11. And Fred worked here at Capitol, excuse me, and eventually became president and eventually retired. So that's how that all came about. And I enjoyed the association. I had a good time with it. But sooner or later, you've got to move on to something else. And I worked for maybe five or six different radio stations. I did everything that a radio station that you could do, including being a general manager. And this was in Rome, Georgia, a guy called me. And I went down, and it looked real good. And I found out quickly that I didn't know a damn thing about FCC law or managing a station or filing for real fire, you know. Mm-hmm. And that didn't last very long. And he fired me. I was there 9 months. And but that's how I came to Raleigh. Mm-hmm. And it was a wonderful experience. And like everything else, things get kind of tiring after a while, and I wanted to do something else. And if I tell you this, it's true. I would get out of radio every now and then, and I would try something else. Mm-hmm. I was a special agent for a casualty insurance company. I sold life insurance. I tried to sell two-way radios. And I would fall flat on my keister. And everybody that I knew and knew me, they said, get back into broadcasting and accept what is there, because you're good at it and you know what you're doing. And so then I'd always get back in it.
And then Bob came to Raleigh.
I came here in winter of 59. I was working at a radio station in Richmond. And a man that I knew from Greensboro, a man by the name of Hugh Holder, was a staff announcer for CBS Radio. And he and some partners bought a station, and it was called WNAO, the News and Observer. And so they bought it, and it was a dog. And after 2 months, one of the partners, there were five of them, wanted to get out. He said, I can't stand this. And so we all sat down. I was what they call operations director or program director. And we all sat down and said, let's bomb this thing good. Let's go 24 hours. Let's rock and roll it. And we did.
What was the format up to that point?
Oh, Peggy Lee, Frank Sinatra, Tommy Dorsey's orchestra, quiet, almost FM background music. Mm-hmm. And, I was selling advertising, too, and I lost some clients. But if you're not familiar with it, Kix became probably the finest AM radio station in the Southeast, well-known, well-thought of. And I worked with some great disc jockeys. I mean, Pat Patterson and Charlie Brown and Gary Edens and Mike Ranieri and Charlie Hicks and Bob Jones. And I was Bob Kelly. They wouldn't let me use DeBartoli. And the reason it was Kelly, because they had these jingles for each disc jockey. Mm-hmm. And they had hired a guy whose probably name was Smith, and they made him Bob Kelly. And he didn't stay but a month, and they fired him. So I became Bob Kelly.
They had the jingle.
Time for the Bob Kelly Show, time for the man on the go. And I'd sign off by saying, this is Ms. Kelly's little bald-headed boy, Rapid Robert. And to this day, the owner of this place that we are sitting in, if he sees me, calls me Rapid. Jim Goodman calls me Rapid. So, and that's how I came to being here.
And you talk about the legacy of WKIX back in the 60s, and it is a huge legacy. There, I expect that every teenager in Wake County was listening to WKIX in the 60s.
Not only that, we sold a lot of advertising to begin with. None of the merchants in Raleigh wanted to do anything to do with us. They didn't like the music. They didn't like the rapid fire. And we raised the rates dramatically from what it was, the advertising rates. And then the national business started rolling in. Of course, that's just pure gravy, you know. You just have to pay commission to your rep in New York, but that's all. And all of that, I think the group that I came here with, I think they paid somewhere better than $200,000 for the station. And I think the first time it was sold, and it was sold several times since to this date, I think it was well over $1 million the first time. While I was at Kix, I had a chance to go with the radio division of Capital Broadcasting Company. At that time, it was called the Tobacco Radio Network. And you would sell advertising for your member stations. And I did that for about a year. And it was a good move on my part. I had a good background. I started doing commercials for them. We set up the North Carolina News Network and radio. I was doing the morning show on RAL.
Bob worked for WRAL-FM in the late 1960s and early 70s, and FM radio was not what it is today.
Background music, and as a matter of fact, we here had a program that you could buy from us, a converter to attach to your car radio so you could get FM.
Wow.
And we sold them through here. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's how nobody listened to FM. And if it was, it was elevator music.
Right.
And I mean, we did it here. We had an automated system. And we had these big tapes. And it was all automated. You press the buttons and the tape would, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, it just was not good.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And then we started going little live things. Charlie Daddy came in and did the morning bit for a while. Then I went on the morning bit for a while. The TV station would call and say, we'd like for you to do a commercial. Do you know how to do a commercial? And I said, no, but I'd like to learn. And so I started doing commercials for them. The big one, the biggest one was Roses. And it was always a little extra money. Also, I did a quiz show called Dialing for Dollars. Well, you had a great big circle. And you had numbers on it and letters, and you would spin the circle, and then you would put how much money was in the jackpot. Then you would pick out a phone call at random, and the question was, you know, hi, this is Dialing for Dollars. If you can give me the count and the amount, the money in is yours. And then every day we would add 10 more dollars to the jackpot. And that was fun. That was fun. And to this day, there is a man in town Richard. His name is Richard Sykes, and he runs the North Carolina State Golf Program. And to this date, if he sees me, it's Dollar Bob! Dollar Bob. That was fun. That was fun. So this kept going on and on and on. And finally, one day, Bob Caudle, who was doing the weather, and wanted to get out of doing the weather. He wanted to go into sales. So they came to me and asked me if I was interested in doing the weather, and I said, sure. And we had a cute little promotion effort called As the Weather Turns. I started out doing all three weathers, noon, 6, and 11.
Mm-hmm.
That became a drag.
I can imagine.
But at the same time, I was trying to get some semblance of recognition. And so the people would have a little more trust in me. When I got the job, I called the old Weather Bureau out at the airport. I told them who I was and I was going to take over this job, and I said, I'd like to come out and talk to you. And they said, fine, Bob, give us a call, and if we don't have bad weather, come on out. Mm-hmm. And so maybe twice a week I would go out and see them, and they would put the charts over the table, and they'd say, now this is, you know, and I learned a tremendous amount that way. Learning and then doing was great. Back in the old days, we had a great big old map, and we had symbols that we had magnets on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know where Idaho was or where Iowa was, so I took a pencil and I went to the little corner of each state, and I would put IA or KY, you know. You couldn't see it with the camera, but I knew I could point to it. Hey, that's Idaho. I had a neat thing happen. One of the trade magazines, I can't remember which one, voted me the third most popular local television weatherman in the country, number three.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you're talking about, I walked around with a halo over my head, you know. But that was really nice.
In 1981, WRAL hired Greg Fischel to be the station's first meteorologist. He's still there. Greg prepared the forecasts that Bob delivered on the air.
So I learned a lot from Greg. One of the local radio stations, without mentioning name, they were talking a rear-end cold front. And I called him and I said, I don't want to identify myself, but I know a little bit about the weather. And if you don't mind, it's called a backdoor cold front. And so they said, well, thank you very much. Who are you? And I said, well, that's not the point. I'm enjoying your enjoying the station. Mm-hmm. And this guy said, I just heard from Bob DeBartolomeo. I remember when Tom Suda retired, Dave Crabtree, and we all were at his retirement party. Dave Crabtree, when it came time for me to speak, he said, now you need to tell some of these people who you are and what you did. So I got up in the microphone. I said, my name's Bob DeBartolomeo, and I taught Greg Fischel everything he knows. that was funny. Weather is an interesting thing because it is the only thing, no matter what other people may say, it's the only thing that 100% of the population has the need to know. The only thing. They don't care about sports, some of them. They don't care a damn about news sometimes. They want to know, Bob, is it going to rain on my golf tomorrow? Seriously. Mm-hmm. Every walk of life has that need to know. And if you program yourself around that, then you can do your job and they can come to respect you. I had a good time, and they treated me really well.
Bob remembers watching the news operation at WRAL-TV mature from the early days in the 1960s.
Sam Beard was the news director, was the anchor, mm-hmm. Before a man by the name of Joel Lahan. And then when Joel left, Charlie Gatti, we hired from WPTF Radio.
And didn't Sam Beard work at WPTF?
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm. Yes, he did. And Charlie came in and became the anchor. And then we had some wonderful co-anchors with Bobby Batista, right. And then Adele Arakawa, who we just all loved, you know. In fact, it was a lot of fun going to work with them. Charlie was the dean of the newscasters and still is, you know, and just a real solid. No editorializing, the news.
In the late 70s, local TV news was big business, and Channel 5 saw an opening.
When the new management team came in, Fred Barber, John Green, and a man by the name of Rick Ray, who eventually founded Raycom Sports. And they said, we don't want to be just complacent with Channel 11. We don't want to share the market with Channel 11. We want to whip their fanny and dominate the market. And it happened. Now, we worked hard. We worked hard. The news gathering became more predominant. Weather forecasting became more predominant. We enlarged the weather center, as you know. Stations around the country were hiring graduate meteorologists. I didn't mind. I had a job. I had a contract. I was glad to work with Greg. Yeah. And we had a great time. Yeah. We had a great time.
The strategy paid off. WRAL achieved some of the highest local TV news ratings in the country during the late 70s, all the way through the 80s. As Bob mentioned earlier, he was one of the most popular local TV personalities in the country. But one of his favorite memories from the 80s was his moment in the national spotlight.
John Green called me in one day and he said, we're going to do a guest appearance, arranged for you to be a guest appearance on one of the soap operas. And we were ABC at the time. Mm-hmm. And we'll use this as a promotional stunt. And you can have five lines or less, and not have to join the union. Uh-huh. So John and I hightail it up to New York, and the soap opera is Ryan's Hope, which is no longer in existence. Mm-hmm. And I'm a thug. And on the script, it's Thug One and Thug Two. And I learned an awful lot about how hard soap operas, soap people work. Mm-hmm. They work hard. They get the script at 8 o'clock in the morning. It might be 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night. And the director of that show that day is not happy. And, you know, you keep doing it, and then you get the script to go home, and you're back at 8 o'clock in the next morning. I mean, they do work hard.
It's a real job.
It's really. And so, but we had a great time. I had limousines wherever I went. And when I came back to the station, everybody was out on the bridge upstairs, yeah. And I was in the limo, and big sign that said, Welcome Home, Star. And then we did a little quiz. What were Bob's three lines? Uh-huh. And we pulled a name out of the hat, and we sent that person to New York to watch. And but I tell everybody now that my guest appearance on Ryan's Hope led to the demise of the soap operas.
You remember but, your lines?
Well, well, look who's here. Isn't that John's girlfriend? And then as she walks by me, I turn to the guy next to me, and I say, that gal better watch it. Oh, but that was fun.
I bet that was fun.
And I got to see, John and I went to see Cats with Betty Buckley, the original cast. Mm-hmm. And after being told that there weren't tickets available, then we went to a restaurant that I wanted to go to. Playboy magazine had named it a 5-star. And John said, we can't get in. But he called somebody, and we got in. And that was a wonderful experience. Mm-hmm. That was great.
Even at the height of his popularity, Bob published his phone number in the directory. And he got his share of crazy calls in the middle of the night from viewers wanting to know what the weather was going to be in the morning. You know, viewer feedback comes with the territory in this line of work. And Bob remembers one letter in particular.
A woman wrote me a letter and just chewed me out because I said on the air, I do not like snow. And she said, there are people in this world who had never seen, and this is the words she used, God's driven angel dust. So I showed the letter to John Green. I said, I want a reply, and a stinking reply. He said, let me see it before you mail it. So here's the letter. Dear Ms. Jones, this is what I feel about snow. A, snow's a burden to the taxpayer. B, snow's a burden to the elderly. C, snow's a killer. Sincerely yours, Bob the Bartleman. And I showed it to John Green, and he said, yeah, mail it, mail it.
After 13 years as the weather anchor on WRAL-TV, Bob retired in 1989.
When I reached 62, I said, you know, I want to play some more golf. And because you had to be, you're a slave to the clock. You couldn't call Charlie and say, Charlie, there's Bob. I'm running a few minutes late, you know. Can you take the weather for me, please? The only thing I think about now is getting to my tea time on time.
Bob has enjoyed a healthy, active retirement. He worked at a golf course for several years, and now he's just trying to play as much golf as he possibly can. And he still keeps in touch with his close friends from Channel 5, like Greg Fischel and Tom Suter. They get together for dinner now and then. Bob loves music. He listens to a lot of radio, watches a lot of news. And I asked him, what does he think of the media today?
Radio today is not like it was years ago. Mm-hmm. It's a little cutthroat. I don't think they give you what you need. They also, and this is one of the other stations that in the area, which is a terrible, terribly operated radio station. Yeah. I'm embarrassed to even listen to it, really, and you know which one I'm talking about. I think radio has progressed into an everyday type thing where you can listen to it a little bit and get informed, and you can thumb around, and I don't think it was like back in the days when we had kicks.
Yeah.
It's not the same. It seems to me now, Brian, that there's more bad news than there was back in those days. Now, maybe I just wasn't accustomed to hearing all the bad news, but you turn on radio and TV now, it's all bad. Very seldom do you hear any positive news. Once in a while, you'll hear a positive or see a positive story, but there's a lot of bad news around the world.
What's really incredible is that today, almost 25 years since he retired from TV, people still come up to Bob and treat him like an old friend.
I don't think there's a day go by that somebody doesn't say, not only how's the weather, or we miss you, Bob, mm-hmm. we enjoyed you all these years, you look good, you know, stay healthy. And really, there isn't a day go by. But somebody, I meet with a bunch of old guys in the morning at McDonald's, and we talk about our ills and pills. And people come walk by, and they'll say, aren't you? And my wife gave me a sweatshirt that says, yes, I am the celebrity that you think I am.
make you feel?
Wonderful, really. It's like Johnny Carson said, you come into their home, you're a member, like you just said, you're a member of their family. They look at you like you're a member of the family. They appreciate what you're doing. It's very rewarding. I think the only thing I miss the people, and that is a sincere statement. I miss working at Channel 5.
Now, I want you to go to YouTube and look up Bob DeBartolabin and take a look at some of those clips of Bob working in the 70s and 80s, and I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a better broadcaster. I want to thank Bob for taking the time to share some of his memories with me for this podcast. I also want to thank his daughter, Allison, for helping to connect us and make all this happen. Go to FadedSignals.com for more broadcast history. And if you have an idea for a podcast or some other comment, just send me a note. The email is comments@FadedSignals.com. I'm Brian Schrader. I thank you for listening.